Welcome to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. We're Kate and Liam, married bisexuals a decade into our non-monogamous journey.
We've been having sex with our friends for 10 years, and we're still madly in love with each other.
We're the authors of the Monogamous Marriage blog, where we've been overthinking sex and love since 2016. This podcast is the place where we process our sexual adventures in real time.
We are not experts, and nothing we say should be mistaken for professional advice. This show contains mature language and sexual content, so if you're under 18, it isn't for you. But if you're a fellow overthinker and you're not freaked out by unfiltered conversation, you're going to feel right at home.
This is a very different episode for us. I know we've probably said that a few times already, but I think after you listen to this one, you'll agree. It's a two-part episode dealing with a very specific conflict in our relationship around the subject of separate dating.
We recorded this a few days before Liam went on his first separate date, something that he's been wanting for a long time and I've been resistant to. And in the moment, the emotions were high and they were raw. But we wanted to give you an unfiltered look into our process as we came at this issue from very different sides and we found ourselves at a bit of an impasse.
Listening back during the editing process, I was cringing a few times. There were definitely spots where I was waiting for myself to say something and I just never said it. So if it's of any value, I want people to know that this is not a perfect representation of my feelings, but rather how they came out in the moment.
Which is an important lesson in itself, because sometimes we imagine we're making our point very clearly and we're being very compassionate to our partner. But when you listen back, which we don't often get the opportunity to do, we realize, oh, maybe our partner was getting a different experience of the conversation than we imagined we were putting forward. So even that is valuable for us to realize.
So as I mentioned, this is a two-part episode. This first part takes place before the date happened. It gets pretty intense and the feelings run high, but I think it's worthwhile letting everyone know we end up in a very good place.
And we are not immune to conflict. We've been doing this for almost 11 years and most of the road has been pretty smooth, but this was the biggest bumpy patch we've ever experienced. And I think that's important to make public just as much as all our successes.
Yeah, so sit back. I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but you can certainly take it in. And our feeling is if people are able to learn or benefit in some way from what we went through, we'll be very happy.
Buckle up. Today we're going to touch on a topic that we've been dealing with in real time over the past couple of weeks, and that's the idea of separate dating.
Yeah, separate dating being something that I've been interested in for a long time and something you've been really not interested in for a long time.
Right. So let's give a little background. From the very beginning of our relationship, even before our relationship began, you had imagined in your previous marriage that if you were ever to get out of that marriage, the first thing you would do would be to set up a profile online and date a whole bunch of women.
Yeah, I had always thought a Nobel Prize should have been awarded to whoever it was that invented online dating. It seemed to me like the greatest idea. And the way I always pictured it was, imagine I'm in an elevator somewhere and beside me is the perfect person, the perfect potential partner. I don't know if she's available. I don't know if she's looking. I don't know if she enjoys art and reading and all the things that I do. And I have no way of finding out on that elevator trip. But online, I can look at a profile and she can share all kinds of information about herself, her situation. She can share pictures of herself in different circumstances that will tell me something about who she is, and I can do the same. So I thought it was a fantastic idea, and while I was in such a disappointing relationship, I thought, wouldn't it be awesome to just shop around? Because the traditional approach of just meeting someone in real life had actually turned out to be a disaster for me.
Yeah, so the disaster continued when you met me and you never got that opportunity to do your online dating.
No, that's the worst way to put it. The amazing, miraculous thing is that when I finally was free and I started to think about who you were, I realized that I could online date for 3 years and never find someone half as good or half as right for me as you. So I realized that I had found the person that I would have been looking for if I'd tried online dating. So I was frustrated because I wanted to take that scientific approach, but the reality was you were the best choice by far. And to this day, I've never looked back and regretted that I basically went all in with you.
So we got into the lifestyle and mm-hmm. you had an opportunity to do a lot of comparing. We dated all kinds of people and slept with lots of people and had, you know, friendships that were ongoing over years with lots of people. But there was something in your mind that always went back to that idea of you, Liam, going on a date with one other woman and having an opportunity to give her your full undivided attention, lay on all your conversational charms, and move sexually in a slower pace that worked for you rather than feeling rushed by me. Is that accurate?
Kind of. I think for me, what was going on was I was now no longer shopping for the perfect partner, the thing that I would have been doing if I had tried online dating before I met you. So what I wanted to do now was to make up for something that quickly became evident to me in the lifestyle. I looked at you who flourished. Every night was a high five success with you. People longed to be with you. You're great at sex. People connect with you quickly. My experience was kind of the opposite. If you look at it from some perspective, you could say, I just failed. Every night you would do fantastic and I would fail. So that risks making an unfair characterization of my lifestyle experience because overall, I found the entire thing just miraculous. The times when there was less expected of me, so if you're with a guy solo, the feelings afterward were so powerful and the anticipation in advance so tantalizing that everything about it worked for me. But when it was time for me to perform, and so we're talking about erection struggles here, I just could not flourish in the way that I wanted to. And so it eventually occurred to me that the entire setup that was working so well for you, fast connections, let's get to it, let me show you my skills, I'll appreciate yours, didn't work for me at all. And that's when I started to think separate dating would solve that. I imagined, oh, what would it be like if I went slowly with someone? So we had a dinner and we talked and we joked and there was a touch. And then we went someplace to be alone together and there was more touching. And then some clothes came off and then more clothes came off. And this gradual process that leads to sex, which is the traditional model, that's how it generally works. What if I experienced that instead of what we do in the lifestyle, which is, okay, it's sex time. Everybody take off your clothes. That was just so evidently not working for me.
Right. So over the course of the years, you frequently brought up this idea. So you had this idealized vision of what it would look like if you could date someone separate from me. Mm-hmm. And you always came up against resistance because it was hitting on a few insecurity points for me. Mm-hmm. So one of them is, for me to feel safe and in control, I need to have all of the information. So for me, I am totally fine with watching you talk to and flirt with and touch and have sex with other women, as long as I'm there and I can observe what's going on and see the dynamic and feel the energy between you. Mm-hmm. That's where my security and comfort come from. But as soon as you're off on this separate date without me, then my imagination can run wild and I can think of all of the things that maybe you're saying to her and all the intimacies that are being exchanged between you that I can't observe. And those things feel scary and threatening to me. So that's one of the ways it made me feel insecure. Another thing was I hated that I had to be excluded in order for you to have the success you imagined was out there. So you frequently said that you feel like if I'm in the room or even if I'm not in the room, that somehow my presence puts pressure on you. So I've never stood in the way of you having separate play in a separate room. You know, at a party, if you wanted to go off with another woman, you would be welcome to do that. We have had foursome situations where I'm in one room with the man and you're in the other room with the woman. So I've never stood in the way of you having a one-on-one sexual experience. But the fact that I can't even be in the same house as you in order for this experiment to work, that I have to be deliberately excluded, has always felt really bad to me. I never want to be a drawback to your sexual experience and joy, right? I want to be there augmenting it. And I hate the fact that in order for you to have this experience that you imagine is going to be so amazing, a key component of that is excluding me.
Let me deal with both of those. The first one is that your presence being a problem for me is a problem in me. There's nothing about you, nothing about your behavior, nothing about the words you say, nothing about your energy is problematic for me or something that you should change. It's partly related to my personality type, which is a performer. So the person, weirdly enough, that I want to perform for the best in the world, maybe not weirdly, is you. I am coming up against feelings in that situation where it's not I'm worried about my ability to perform for this or that individual. It's for you. I think that's a component of it. The second part of what you said in terms of it being hurtful, why can't you be there? I think it's actually very practical. That situation that I described earlier, you're having dinner, intimacies are exchanged, touches here, touches there, you move on. How do you practically do that with your wife there? Is she at the table? Is she now sitting on the couch with the two of you while you maybe take a half hour of just kissing and touching until the next stage feels right? So I couldn't get past that.
Well, see, this is where I feel like we're coming from different worlds, because I think we have had that experience many times with other couples where we've sat down at the table and we've exchanged stories and felt like there's flirtation and there's chemistry, and we go back to a play space, whether that's that night or another time, and we can go at our own separate paces because we allow ourselves that freedom to go to separate rooms. You do not have to keep up with me. You don't have to be in the same room with me. And we've had times where you go off with another woman and go very slowly, maybe don't even have penetrative sex, where I'm getting slammed in the other room by the husband. So I have seen you have the experience you're talking about. You have been able to use your conversational skills and to be charming and to go slowly and to do things at your own pace in a one-on-one setting. I don't understand why that isn't meeting the need that you imagine you have.
Right. It's interesting you say the need you imagine you have. You have a built-in skepticism about my ability.
Well, because this hasn't happened yet, so we don't know if it's going to be as successful as you think.
Well, yeah, but the need is there and it's prompting me to ask for something and desire it. So,
right. So what is this need that can't be met in a foursome in separate rooms?
It gets to a really important issue. And that is a question. And I think some partners out there will be able to relate to it, which is that in each one of those situations, I don't know if people are really there for you. So let me just sketch out a scenario. Imagine a couple says, that Kate is so fucking hot. I'd love to get with her. And the other person goes, yeah, but have you seen her husband? He's kind of older. And yeah, I know, but you know, what's the lifestyle about? But taking one for the team. And you're kind of bi, so you'll enjoy being with her and I will. And we'll just kind of entertain him. And he is a nice guy, right? Yeah. Oh yeah, he's a nice guy. So inside of me is a critic who says, I know what's going on here. Your wife is very popular and you are part of the cost of doing business. People want to get with her. They got to kind of make peace with being with you. My desire in a one-on-one situation is that no longer is a factor. It cannot be possible. If I'm with a woman and I say, I'd like to go on a date with you, and she says, yeah, that'd be great, there really is no ulterior motive there. It's really about me. And that level of affirmation, which I think you must have gotten a tremendous amount of affirmation from your popularity. So I'm saying kind of, I would like some of that affirmation and I would like to clear out one of the confounding variables.
Right. So I get that. I do understand that logic. But I feel like, so you say you've gotten a tremendous amount of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
But you have been there in the room getting the exact same affirmation as me. Like, we almost always play together. And so the women in the room are giving you the same affirmation as the men in the room are giving me. So I don't understand. I think you have this filter on where no matter how much affirmation you get from these women, your deep insecurity is always going to inform those exchanges. And you're always going to write off the affirmation that I see them very, very clearly giving you over and over again. And you are always going to tell yourself, well, this can't be about me. It must be about Kate.
I'm going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever given a great sexual experience to a guy that you were not really turned on by? There were other factors in play.
Probably.
Yes. I know you have.
So there you go. You're writing off all of these women who have been our friends for years, who we've had lots of sex with. And you're just saying that every time Maria has gravitated toward you in a group situation, that that's false, that that's somehow about me. That's ridiculous.
I'm saying that I'm not really sure. So we've been with lots of people. Many of them are going to be listening to this podcast and going, oh no, I thought you were great. I thought we had something real.
Yeah.
And we did. But this gets to another issue that I think is really important psychologically, which is each of us has an inner skeptic. And the inner skeptic, if we're healthy, looks at what's happening and says, might there be something else going on here? So the inner skeptic hears a promise from a politician, and the politician is saying everything you've ever wanted to hear. They're validating your worldview. And you feel like if you have a healthy inner skeptic, what are they not telling me right now? What compromises will have to be made? And so my inner skeptic comes into the bedroom with me, into every play session, and it says, I think there's a possibility that this person is a really wonderful person who knows how to be an affirming partner to someone she's not really all that enthusiastic about.
Okay. So that brings me to another fear, which is if I say, yes, go ahead, go on this one-on-one date, have your one-on-one affirmation that you need. Mm-hmm. If that goes really well, mm-hmm. how are we ever going to go back to having, you know, foursomes or sixsomes? How are we ever going to play together again? So if you go get this affirmation one-on-one, mm-hmm. and it's the only time you feel like you've truly gotten the affirmation, even though you've had lots of great sex with other women who clearly like you, how can we ever return to what is my favorite way of playing, which is with you there with me?
I think in life, generally, confidence that you pick up in one situation is transferable to another. So in this case, for example, I had that experience. I proved it. I proved it's all me because I asked this person out. They agreed. We got together. We had a wonderful experience. My sexual measure of what success looks like, which is that I was out of my mind in that I was not thinking about how do I look right now? And am I doing the right thing? And is my penis hard enough? And will it remain hard enough? And can I even imagine getting this condom on without it being deflated by the sheer effort of taking care of my responsibility? Now I've answered that question. I've answered the question about my attractiveness. So I believe I now carry that into the foursomes and sixsomes that we've enjoyed together because I do not want to look at the buffet and say, I only want to have salad from now on. I'm not trying to replace, I'm trying to augment.
Right. And again, if you have this amazing experience that you mm-hmm. imagine is out there, how do you not want to have more and more and more of that? So if I agree to one date, if I feel like right. I can get in a place of being comfortable with one date, and you go out there and you have an amazing time, mm-hmm. how do you not, you know, once you've tasted chocolate, how do you not want to have more and more and more chocolate?
How do you not say, my partner just had an amazing, affirming time? Let's see if we can get him more of that.
Well, what if you have an amazing affirming time and I have a horrible, self-doubting, crying, insecure time?
So that gets to the question that animated my requests through the years. Are the bad feelings of one partner the hard limit of the other partner? Or is there something that can be done about those feelings? Are the feelings in charge or are the people in charge?
Okay. So this is the debate we had for about 10 years.
Yes, off and on. You're right. And in different guises, but you're absolutely right.
And so there was a turning point recently when I started to develop feelings for a woman. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that in our bisexual episode. And I started feeling like I owed you something. So you let me have these feelings and you were very gracious and very selfless about encouraging this relationship with her. And I felt like, okay, well, if you've allowed me to breach this limit, because for us, it had always been, we will go as far as sex with our friends, but we will never fall in love. So when these feelings that I was having started to get stronger, I started to feel like I owe you now something that I haven't been able to give you before.
Can I point something out right now before we go on too much further with this story? Because I think it's important. I believe reciprocity is a relationship killer in the lifestyle and in non-monogamy in general. What that means is if I say, wow, I'm allowing Kate to explore and to even fall in love with someone else, imagine what she's going to owe me now. That's a terrible, fatal approach. Because what was really happening was I felt tremendous happiness and fulfillment and even sexual arousal from your relationship.
And you got to be there and have all the sex with her as well. So you got the actual, not just arousal, but the actual sexual benefit.
Right. But you were talking about feeling some kind of sense of obligation to me based on how I behaved towards you in a situation mm-hmm. that was asymmetrical. You were getting more than I was. And I just want to point out to people, because I think it's important, and I think I sounded this note throughout, that I should be allowing you to do something because I believe in your freedom and your happiness, and I am not saying you are now under obligation to me to do the same, because it's a separate case. The case of you falling in love, I'm in favor of. It works for me. It works for you. We start all over again if I'm looking at having an emotional connection with someone. So I respect your right to say it's different. You don't owe me, even though it's very nice that you're saying that you felt like you wanted to provide for me what I provided for you.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you respect my freedom and my happiness. But just a couple minutes ago, you were saying that you don't think that the discomfort of one partner should be the thing that decides whether a thing happens or doesn't happen in a relationship. So those two things seem to be contradictory to me, that you should say, I respect your freedom, which would include my freedom to say no, and I want your happiness. But also to say that you feel like if one person wants something and the other person does not, that the person who does not should not be the one in charge, that their feelings should not be the thing that dictates what the relationship does or does not get to have happen. So those two things don't actually gel in my mind. They contradict each other.
Okay, I think there's a big difference between a positive and a negative freedom. If you said to me, Liam, I've got this crazy fantasy, but it's so strong at the nude pool at Hedonism, I need you to wear a clown nose and I want you to put this funny dildo up your ass and I'm actually going to blow the most hung guy in the pool that I can. And it's going to be like, people are going to be kind of laughing at you, but it's going to make me so happy and it feeds something inside of me. Then I'm saying, okay, I think I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm pretty game, but I think I'm uncomfortable with that because you're asking me to do something. Mm-hmm. So I think in this case, I'm asking you to not do something, which is to not object. So your no isn't something that's being done to you. Your no is, can you please not do something to spare my feelings? I feel like there's a big difference there, but I'm open to other ways of looking at it.
I do not feel that there's a big difference at all.
Okay.
I feel like there's no difference. So your discomfort at wearing a clown nose and a funny dildo
right.
is a feeling.
It's a feeling for sure.
And my discomfort at you going on a date and potentially having a relationship with another woman is also a feeling. Both of them come from our place of insecurity. You know, you don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be abandoned. Those are our core fears.
Right.
And each of these requests are hitting on that core fear and asking us to overcome the thing that is the hardest for us to overcome.
Right.
So I don't think that there's any difference in those two situations.
Okay. I'm not going to dive into a debate on that topic because I think it's really fascinating. But I, again, and something I really appreciate about you, I got to say my piece in this instance. So I really appreciate that, being able to say, here's my perspective, and I've heard yours, and I am trying to, through this whole process, look at things less in a strictly idiosyncratically logical way, meaning that I know how I think about things, I know how I assemble an argument, and I can sometimes get caught up in the purity of that argument that I've constructed and not look beyond it to the feelings of others. So that is one thing I've learned this week. And I think in the next section, we're going to talk about what we did with these feelings, because I think we've really done a great job of laying out for people what an impasse looks like from us. The only thing that's not accurate is this took about 20-something minutes, and usually it takes about a week.
Well, this conversation has taken 10 years.
Yeah, so that's another
way to put it. So we keep coming back to this idea of separate dating. For a decade, we've been coming back to it. So anyway, I finally got to the place where, for whatever reason, mostly because you were nice about me falling in love with a chick, I said, okay, let's revisit that issue of you dating separately, but I need to put some parameters around it to make me feel safe. So I can't handle the idea of you just going and online dating and finding someone separate to date without me knowing that person. That feels too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. There are too many unknowns there. So if you take one of the women that we already know, and we talked about some women, I think we threw around maybe four names of women who we were close to, we had known for years, you had had sexual success with, and you were attracted to.
And who lived close by, because there are other women who live in other cities who are unbelievable, but it's just not practical in a dating context.
Right. So I thought I would be comfortable with you choosing one of our friends and going on a date with them. So I agreed to those terms. I will be going out of town tomorrow with my kids to go skiing for a few days. Mm-hmm. And I said, this would be a good window of opportunity for you to set up that date. I won't be in town. So if you even wanted to have her here, you could do that.
Right. So I thought, this is fantastic, because this was a case where I had asked for something. And I'll confess, in the past, I sometimes thought, oh, it'd be great to go on Tinder or Match and locate a woman and talk to her, see if I can attract her interest, see if I sustain my interest in her through our back and forth, and then meet in person and then go on a date and eventually have sex. And that was a stupid idea, because as you rightly pointed out, we knew some fabulous women with whom I already had a foundation of connection, and I would be wasting so much time looking online for something that was already in our lives. So this is an example to me of us working collaboratively. Your idea of asking a friend of ours was the best way to go about this. So I really appreciated that.
So you chose a woman, and how did you proceed?
I had a conundrum to deal with. Do I contact Caitlin directly and say, hey, Kate and I have been thinking about a separate dating situation and I would like to go out with you? Or do I contact her partner, Colin, first and say, hey, Colin, I have this interest in Caitlin, but I want to make sure you're comfortable with it. And the problem with that is that if I contact Colin, I'm kind of playing into an old patriarchal setup as if he owns her. But if I contact Caitlin first, how would I feel if this shoe was on the other foot? Like, again, that idea of not knowing what's going on, being kept in the dark. And so I ultimately decided that I would contact Colin first and say, here's what we want to do. And I only want to do it. Actually, I didn't say only want to do it if you're okay with it, because I didn't want to get him into a position where he had to give permission. But I kind of let him know and let him know that his feelings were important to me. So I definitely communicated that. And he was very receptive. And then I went forward and contacted Caitlin and said, Kate and I have been talking about this for a long time. We would like to experiment with it. And I said, you know, would you be interested in having a date? And she was extremely positive, which was very fulfilling for me right at that point, because now I am in that space that I was longing to be in, where it's only me. There is no other attraction that might be in play causing someone to do something just to make me feel good.
So it seemed like everything was going okay. You did the asking. She enthusiastically said yes. I got curious about my feelings and honestly felt like I feel okay. You know, I'm not jealous. I'm not insecure or scared. I'm just curious about how this is going to go. I really wanted to know if this thing that you had built up in your mind as being like the epitome of awesomeness for your lifestyle experience, if it was going to live up to that expectation.
Right.
And so for a week and a half or 2 weeks, we went about our business and everything seemed pretty chill.
But that came to an end, and in the next segment, we're going to talk about exactly what happened when that came to an end. Because this is a special episode, we're only going to take one break and try to keep our announcements brief.
So let's first cover the upcoming events. We are going to be in Montana at Glacier National Park with our dear sexy friends, Naughty Jim, from May 7th to 11th for their outdoor adventure extravaganza. Then we're going to be at Podcastapalooza Colourpop in Palm Springs. That's from June 3rd to 6th. And this event is not yet sold out. So if you'd like to join us in Palm Springs in June, we would love to meet you there. Go to our website to find information and a link for registration. We are also going to be in Antigua with Room 77 for their Summer Bang 2022 extravaganza. Did I already say extravaganza? Anyway, that's going to be from July 29th to August 5th. I am going to be celebrating my birthday there, and that event is also not yet sold out. So if you want to come help sing happy birthday or give me some birthday spankings, we would love to see you in Antigua.
One other thing we want to mention is that we had a bit of trouble with our Patreon account in that it turns out Patreon's kind of sex negative and was challenged by some of our material. So,
and we are very naughty.
Yeah, there's that too. So we have since recovered, but we have a new address. So if you're interested in supporting us, you know, we always do the blog and the podcast for free. But some people have said, no, we want to give back to you. And we really appreciate that. The address is patreon.com/Kate_and_Liam. So that's patreon.com/Kate and Liam. And now back to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. So just before the break, we said in this segment, we are going to talk about how this understanding we had, which turned out to be a fragile understanding, came to unravel. So can you remember the first moment where you thought, this is not what I believed it was going to be?
Yes. So we had been in the sauna and we were talking about how this date was going to play out. You were giving me some of the details about how you imagined having her over, making her dinner, mm-hmm. and then if sex was going to happen, you could take her upstairs. And you were going to have a phone call with her later that night to, right. to set up the details. So I think you were just kind of running them through with me first. And everything felt fine. I'm even okay with you sleeping with her in our bed. We've done that lots of times with other people. Where it fell apart for me was you said, and if this goes well, you know, I can see asking her to do this maybe once a month.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it went from you're going on kind of a hot husband date to you're beginning a relationship with this woman. Because you can't possibly go out with her once a month and have alone time and sex with her and not develop feelings and not feel like it's a relationship. So I felt like I had been punched in the stomach, really. I just right. kind of sat there as you were getting out of the sauna, not really realizing that you had just pulled this thing that I think for you was just kind of a speaking off the top of your head, just kind of imagining how the future might look. It wasn't something that you were trying to be, you know, deliberately sneaky about or hide from me, I don't think. You were just speaking from your heart of what your hope was for if this went well. Which actually made it feel worse because I thought, oh, okay, now I'm seeing what you actually want, what's at the core of this desire for you. And I am suddenly very uncomfortable with all of it.
Right. You are correct saying that I was just kind of speaking casually about what might happen. But tell me what you think was going on, because you said now I felt like you revealed what you were really up to. What do you think I was really up to? Or what did you think at the time? Maybe you still do, but what did you think at the time I was perhaps really up to that might be problematic?
Well, not even up to, just what you wanted. So right. The way you had always framed this to me was you wanted to have a sexual experience and experiment. Mm-hmm. So all of the things we had done in the lifestyle together had not worked out the way you wanted them to. And you imagined that this would be different and that you would be able to have that genuine, authentic sexual desire and connection between you and another woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to the place of being okay with that. But as soon as you said that there was maybe going to be an emotional relational component, I realized, oh, you don't just want a sexual experiment.
Right.
You want something much deeper than that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a hard thing to put boundaries around, because if you say a purely sexual experience, well, prostitutes do that extremely well. And in opposition to that is the way we usually do things, which involve feelings, and we're super comfortable being close to other people. So it's inevitable that there would be closeness there. But I think you were afraid of something else, like something going beyond that, maybe to the level of obsession. Is that what you were thinking when I was saying, hey, maybe we could get together once a month and do this?
Not obsession, but love. Yeah, right. I imagined you coming home and saying, I've fallen in love with Caitlin, and me feeling like you might as well just stab me in the guts and let my intestines fall out on the floor. Like, that's how it felt in my body to imagine you falling in love with someone else. So yeah, so for me, sex is easy. Sex is light and playful, no strings attached, you know, come and go, no problem.
And that's because you're good at it, by the way. I wish I had the luxury of seeing sex as playful, fun, angst-free. But I don't. That's not something you did wrong. That's fabulous. But it does get to the point of something that I was hoping to experience in my own way.
Okay. So explain what you wanted to experience in your own way.
I think if I look at what's my best experience is one-on-one using my natural curiosity to learn about another person. And that necessarily requires forging a bond. But it does not require falling in love the way we generally understand it, which is, I don't know, you're looking at houses together. And I know I'm exaggerating by saying that. But for me, I'm imagining a relationship where there is a closeness and an emotional bond, but there are also limits to the relationship. So my relationship with you has no limits. There's no end time. There's no part in the day where, I'm off the clock with Kate. It's like, I go to bed with you. I wake up with you. We might be apart at certain periods, but there are no limitations on the relationship. And I love it that way. You are the only person I can have that kind of relationship with, where my tolerance is infinite. So I do not expect to encounter that in another person. I do not have the bandwidth to pursue that with another person.
Okay.
So what I want is something shy of that. I get to be my best self, and my best self is one-on-one with another person where there is not even the guarantee of sex, because that runs completely counter to what I'm looking for, but where sex is a possibility. So if we want to go there, we go there. And if we don't, we don't, which is so at odds with what the lifestyle generally serves up, which is, now it's sex time, we're all going to take our clothes off and have sex. And I like being able to feel my way to that destination or not, as the relationship allows in the moment.
Okay. So we had this revelation in the afternoon that your desire was not a one-time thing, it was an ongoing thing. And that, in my mind, reframed the whole project. So I had agreed to these very limited parameters of choose a friend, have one date, and satisfy your curiosity.
Right, because you were afraid of me falling in love.
Yes.
And I think that's worth pausing over for a moment. So there's a line in a Sarah McLachlan song where she says, I won't fear love. And it seems like such a contradiction. Love's not the thing you fear. Love's the thing that you pursue. But in this situation, there is a fear of love in someone that you love, loving someone else. And I feel like there must be implications beyond that. It's not just the love, it's what would the love mean?
Yeah. So, you know, I immediately think of you spending time with her. Maybe that time takes away from the potential time we have together. So, mm-hmm. you know, every other weekend is a kid-free weekend for us. Yep. And those are kind of sacred times where we do our thing together. Sometimes it's a lifestyle thing. Sometimes it's us going on dates. So I imagine, you know, of those 4 days per month, maybe one of them now has to go to Caitlin. And, right. you know, and then I imagine resources in other ways going to her. So money or gifts or travel time, and time where you're sitting on the couch texting her and I would just like to be with you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all that scarcity mindset stuff where, right. As much as I like to say, oh, love is infinite. I love both my children the same. I can love you and someone else. When it comes down to it, I have real fears and real insecurities about how much I'm willing to share you.
Right. And what do you think that's tied to? Or maybe I should ask this. When you fell in love with someone else, what made you, aside from the fact that it was happening to you and you understand yourself, what was it about your situation that made you more comfortable and that you felt was not applicable to my, I'm not even saying my situation because nothing's happened yet, but the potential of a situation that was similar with me?
I think it's pretty different. So the woman that I am into lives very far away. So there's okay. no way I can go out with her once a month. There's no way my time and money is going to be expended on her in any regular way that is threatening to you. If we travel to Alabama to right. see her, you're going to be there with me.
Right.
And at every stage in our relationship, you have been there side by side with me. You've been in the bedroom. You've been on the dates. We have never been separate.
Right.
You have always been there with me as I have fallen for April. So that comfort that I want to have, to be in on all the conversations, to see the looks, to see the gestures, to feel the energy, you have been there. So you've had all that reassurance because every step of the way, I have wanted you there with me. I have never said, Liam, you are not allowed in this space. I have never excluded you.
Right.
And it's a same-sex relationship. So she's offering me something that you cannot possibly offer me. So I get right. that another woman can offer you something I cannot possibly give you just because she's a different personality. But for me, it felt quite different.
Okay, can we deal with each one of these individually? In terms of distance, that is just a complete fluke. Like, this could easily have happened with someone who live 5 streets over from us.
Right. And then you'd be justified in feeling like, I'm afraid that your time is going to be taken over by your new relationship energy wanting to be with her all the time.
Right. So the shoe would have been on the other foot. But if your feelings were just as strong, how would you feel about that, about me feeling threatened? Because now this is what your heart wants. Your heart wants to spend some time. And I don't believe that you wanted to spend a long time away from me. Just as I don't feel that that's what I want a long time from you because you're the one I enjoy being around so much. But it could easily have happened that she was close by. So now we get to the second point.
You were involved at every step.
Right. What you're saying is, in a way, unconsciously, I will do the precedent setting. So if it happens the way it happens for me, I'm fine with it. So if it's at a great distance, good. If I'm including you all the time because it feels good for me, then that's now the standard for you. And I think that's where we ran into the problem. And what was the third point?
Same sex.
Right, same sex. So, again, that's a way in which this is different because it's an opposite sex person. I'm struggling with those things, and at the same time, I'm trying to listen to your concerns because they're real. And as you said earlier, all we have is feelings. That's it. And so your feelings are real. So I have this logical argument that I'm laying out, but I'm also realizing the logical argument is in the service of me getting what I wanted.
Another key difference is that before I even met April, mm-hmm. we had talked about the potential of me finding a girlfriend. And your immediate reaction was enthusiastic, yes.
Right.
You wanted that for me. Mm-hmm. So before I even met her, I had your permission to go ahead and do this. Mm-hmm. However, in this situation, I had been super clear about the fact that I am not comfortable with you having an emotional relationship.
Right.
So you slipped into wanting this thing that I had said, I can't give you. If I had known in advance, if I had said, I would really love to have a girlfriend, and you said, absolutely, I can't handle the thought of that, I would turn that possibility off in my mind. I might have had great sex with April that night, but I would not have thought that there was a potential to go farther. Because in my mind, we do all of these things together. You're my first priority. You're my number one partner. And if you had said in advance, I can't handle the thought of you having an emotional connection with someone, even a woman, I would have said, okay, I love you. I respect you. I want to take care of you first. You're the most important thing in my world. And I would not have even let my heart go there. I know for a fact that that's how I work.
Right.
And so the fact that I have said so clearly over the past 10 years, I know it's insecure of me. I know it's not evolved of me. I aspire to be better. But at my core, I have deep insecurities about being abandoned. And I can't comfortably allow you to have a separate relationship and to fall in love with someone else. So knowing that super clearly,
right,
I would hope that you would say, okay, I am just not going to go there. I have all these other freedoms. We can date together. We can fuck people separately, but I am not going to push to have this thing that you've been super clear about not being able to give me, because I am your priority. That's what I want to hear.
Right.
So let's get back to the actual conflict, because we're talking in theories here. Let's talk about the fight we had for approximately 7 days.
Yeah, I think not wasted time, though, because our conflict is undergirded by theories. I think it's good for us. I think it's good for the people listening to this for us to air our theories as opposed to them operating covertly behind the scenes.
Right. Okay. So we had this conversation in the sauna. You said you were imagining once a month dates. I said, what the fuck are you talking about? And we talked for 4 to 5 hours. I got upset. You got defensive. And then slowly, over the course of several hours, I think between 3 and 7 o'clock that day, I got you to agree to say this is a one-time date because you were going to have that conversation with her at 7 o'clock that night.
Right.
And in that conversation, you were going to lay out what your plan was. And I think initially you imagined that this could be an ongoing thing.
Right. I actually felt grateful for you saying this should just be a one-time thing, because that's a case where I forgot that is the smartest approach. Why? Because I don't know how I'm going to feel. So I might get together with Caitlin and think, oh, I've always liked her, but this part's not kind of working. We're sort of, we're two good people who, when it comes to one-on-one, aren't gelling. Or she might feel the same way. I'm ecstatic, and she's going, yeah, just not what I thought. Or either of our partners could have had a negative feeling. So it was so smart to say that. So you made my conversation with her better. I was able to say, yeah, we want to do this one time, and then regroup and see what everyone thinks. So that was a case where me sharing a thought off the top of my head that wasn't really thought through actually helped you to come up with a suggestion that made the interaction better.
So how did that phone call go?
The phone call went extremely well. So she said to me something that she had just kind of suggested in her email response, which was that she was flattered and excited. And when I mentioned sex, she was just, I can't tell you the exact words she said, but it was like, oh yeah, I want that too. And that felt phenomenal.
Right. So you got off the phone that night and you were debriefing me and you talked about the fact that she said, wow, you seem to be someone who's got it all together. You have all these options. I'm so flattered that you chose me of all the women you could have picked.
Right.
And you said that felt so good. You felt so pumped up and so affirmed. And you said you'd never had that kind of affirmation in the lifestyle before.
Right.
So that was a big conversation for you. It felt like all the things you wanted to feel, right?
Yet the conversation went as well as I could have hoped.
And then our next big problem happened when I asked, do I make you feel that way, or have I ever made you feel that way? And you said, and couldn't think of a single time.
Right.
Talk about that.
I always want to be really honest and not give the easy answer. And so I said, I don't know if you've ever made me feel that way precisely. So I like to hear about the good things I've done. And the reason is that's how I feel seen. So if someone says, oh, I really like how you expressed your opinion there, or I like your use of that word, I feel like you noticed. You were actually paying attention. You saw that. I liked it too. I thought it was pretty good. I'm so glad that you saw it. So,
which is not really what Caitlin was doing. She was just giving general affirmations like, you seem to have everything together and have all these options. I'm flattered you would pick me.
I know.
Right? She wasn't pointing out something specific you had done.
No, but that's so powerful for me because what she's pointing out is all that stuff you've been working on, I've seen it and I think it's great. So she is actually affirming not a specific thing, but a very broad project that I've been engaged in since I can remember.
So the thing that hit me like a slap in the face was the fact that you felt, I have never done that. You
right.
could not think of a single time when I have fed this very deep need for you. And we've talked a lot about how words of affirmation are your love language. And I feel like I've been working really hard at it and saying every day, like, you look so good and your muscles are so big and oh my God, you're so sexy. And I felt like I was doing a really good job. And to hear you say that nothing I'm doing is registering in the way mm-hmm. that you need it to register, I, in that moment, felt for the first time like our marriage is going to end.
Right.
Because if I can't give you the thing you need most, the thing that this woman in 10 minutes of conversation with you gave you that I have not done in 10 years, then what the fuck are you doing with me? Just go fucking marry her.
Right. And the answer is that my attraction to you is on 100 different levels. And
but
yes,
not the one you need the most.
Who said? I didn't say it's the one I need the most. I said it's one that I really appreciate and it's motivating to me. It's not what I need the most. I can tell you what I need the most. I need a partner I can be super proud of. You are that person. I need a partner who is open-minded. You are that partner. I need someone who is emotionally self-regulating. You are that person. I need a person who's concerned with their appearance. Need, want, I like it. I like that about you. I could go on and on. For me to go through a checklist of 17 things you're great at, and then to come to an item where I go, yeah, she's not so great at that. In fact, she's acknowledged it herself. It's not her strength. That's not surprising. Only a dysfunctionally immature individual would say, well, too bad, because I needed all 18 things I wanted. Not just 17 of them, and too bad because you failed on the one, I'm out of here. That is so not me.
Right. So I imagined you going off on this date, having the first sexual success you feel like you've ever had in the lifestyle, feeling affirmed by her in ways that I could never affirm you.
Can I say this?
Having this uncomplicated attraction to a woman who is all words of affirmation and you not being able to see that, oh, there's probably some complicated stuff behind the scenes with her. On the surface, it would be all shiny and new and ooh, I want this. I went into total meltdown.
Right.
Like, that's it. He's going to find what he wants out there. He's obviously not finding it in here, even though I'm working really fucking hard at it. It's
right.
not even registering at all. And so that's it. Our marriage is over.
When you said that, I couldn't believe it. For me, for all the reasons I just said, I think of our marriage as extremely durable because I'm aware of all the levels at which I appreciate you. And it's the thing that allows me to say, okay, she's not great at words of affirmation. It doesn't even matter because, you know, there are some things that she would like from me that I struggle. So I'm going to just share one example. You use the term, he threw me around the bed, as like about the highest praise you can offer for a man. And I, believe me, I have tried. I can't throw you around the bed. I'm just
too heavy.
No, that's the worst way to take this. I do not have that level of, let's say, easy aggression. So I can spank you. It's kind of like a circumscribed aggression, like you're bent over and I know what to do with my hand and I know how to make a good sound and not make it too hard, and not make it too soft. But that kind of freewheeling thing, it's just not in me and I can't let it out because it's not there. And so I trust that the fact that I can't throw you around the bed is not an existential threat to our relationship. So it surprised me that you felt that I might feel that your inability to say exactly the kinds of things I respond to might spell the end for us.
Okay. So for the next 5 days, we kept talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And your approach when you're in a conflict or disagreement is to stay in your logical headspace and to defend your position to the death with as many logical arguments and words as possible.
Yes. Guilty.
Right. And I increasingly felt cornered. So I was having this emotional reaction, and part of my mind knew that it was a little bit irrational. You know, I was experiencing some real cognitive dissonance because I kept thinking, well, I have fallen for this woman and it doesn't threaten our relationship. So how come I can't let you fall for another woman and also believe it won't threaten our relationship? So there was a part of my logical mind that was online, but the much more powerful part was my gut that was clenched, and I had a headache for 5 days straight, and I was on the verge of tears all week long. And so everything in my body was pushing back against what your logic was saying and what my logic was saying.
Right.
And I felt like I was getting bullied, actually.
So that gets to an important part of the standoff we were experiencing, which is perception versus reality. And we were both struggling with that. So this is not a problem. You felt like you were getting bullied. I hear that and go, I don't bully anybody. I don't bully people who should be bullied.
But, no, not in a physically threatening way, no, but an intellectual bullying.
Yeah, I so do not believe in that. When I listen to an interview and I feel like the interviewer is bullying a guest into saying something they don't want to say, I react viscerally to that. So I never want to be that person. It doesn't mean I'm not that person. I'm just saying, aspirationally, I do not want to be that person. And likewise, I was having feelings about you that I was not interpreting correctly. I was making mistakes in terms of theorizing about what you might be about. So if that hand gesture you just gave me means, give me an example, I would say, I felt you were feeling powerful feelings and you weren't critiquing them. So you were saying, my feelings have spoken and they must be obeyed. And that was unfair because you had a very strong intellectual process going on, which you've just shared with us. You were thinking, but you know, why is this different from my feelings for my girlfriend? And am I being unfair to him? So I was treating you in my mind as if you just were a one-dimensional ball of feelings. And that was not true. And I was not listening to those feelings.
Right. So there were a couple of times when you said, but these are just feelings. I'm not doing anything to you. I'm not making you do anything.
Right.
And it's your responsibility to deal with your feelings. And I was like, but hold on now. Life is just feelings. Our love is just feelings. Like, you can't minimize the importance of feelings.
Right.
They're big. They're real. They're significant, right?
Right.
So to say that I'm not making you do something, well, you kind of are. You are making me, you know, agree to something I don't feel comfortable with. And that flies in the face of everything we always said we believed about the lifestyle and consent and this being about us and augmenting our sex lives. So to push me into doing something that I've in the past said I'm uncomfortable with, and now I am really clearly displaying through my crying and headaches that I'm not comfortable with, to keep pushing and pushing and pushing me and telling me that, well, those are just your feelings, you have to deal with them, felt heartless to me.
Right. And you're right. It was heartless. I had allowed myself to get into a position where I felt the rightness of my desire trumped any feelings you were experiencing. And that was just so wrong in so many ways.
Throughout this process, what I really wanted was you just to come alongside me and say, you know what, even if you are being emotional, even if you are being irrational, I love you most. I want to put you first. and I'm going to back down, even though I believe in the rightness of this. I'm going to put you first regardless. And you never did that. So the final straw for me was, it was the night before Valentine's. I was lying in bed beside you and I was crying. I was trying to keep it quiet, but I think it was obvious that I was crying. And you were just on your phone and you didn't touch me. You didn't talk to me. And I was lying there feeling more alone than I've ever felt with you. So I got up to leave and I said, I can't believe how cold you are. And I went and slept in the guest room.
Yeah, and I remember that moment so vividly because it's a recurring theme in my life. I'm lying there, and if you could have seen me, I'm in bed. I've got the covers up to my chin. I'm now no longer looking at my phone. I'm staring at the ceiling and saying, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? What's the right thing to do now? And in a situation like that of extreme emotion, I find it very difficult to decide on a course of action. Suddenly, my imaginative powers leave me. Do I go down the hall? Should I put some clothes on first and then go down the hall? Do I hug her or do I say I'm sorry or do I say I repent of ever asking? And I'm going through all that in my mind. And it gets to the point for me where I'm hung up on a logical fallacy, which is, can I be the one who comforts her if I'm the one who caused the pain? Can I be the ally while I'm the enemy? I'm just laying there for 45 minutes, staring at the ceiling. I finally get up, put some clothes on. I walk down to the end of the hall. I don't see a light on under the door, and I think, oh, she's gone to sleep. I guess I won't say anything. Yeah, you know what? Honestly, because I have an avoidant kind of thing with emotions, part of me, not all of me, but part of me goes, I'm off the hook. I've got an excuse for not doing this very difficult thing that I don't really even understand what's required of me. So again, that's not a good thing, but that's very accurate in terms of what I was feeling. But I had underneath all of that, this certainty that there was a rightness in our relationship and we would figure out a way. And it turned out the next day we both decided that the right way forward was to call a therapist, because we realized this was not an argument that had been going on that day or for the previous 5 days. This had been going on for 10 years. And all of our best, happiest times were when we were able to pretend that that divide wasn't there.
But which divide?
The divide between your relationship insecurity and my moral self-certainty.
Okay. So on Valentine's Day, I woke up in the guest room and I had heard you the night before come down the hall because I can't sleep, of course.
Right.
And in my mind, I thought if he comes in and hugs me, things are going to be okay. If he doesn't, they're not. I kind of imagined this is a turning point where either you're going to prioritize us or you're going to prioritize you. And that was a big moment. And you turned around and left. And so I woke up feeling really discouraged. And it was fucking Valentine's Day. And we had canceled our reservation for dinner that night. And so, yeah, it was a really bad morning.
But it was a good morning for me in that I started to make a breakthrough. I started to realize that I could, first of all, show my humanity to you. That was a dumb thing that I was not doing the whole time through, where when you say, I just needed a hug, and for me not to figure out that that was what you needed was embarrassing. So I finally realized that I could do that. And I let go in my mind of the date even happening, because the easiest thing for me to realize was that, of course, I valued you more than any date.
But it took 5 days to realize that.
Oh, yeah, it's not pretty. But it did take me 5 days to get there and to figure out how to navigate from my inner state to what you were experiencing and how to bridge that gap. And so I came to you and said, I'm sorry that this caused you all this pain. And we talked for a bit and realized that we needed to do something. And so we called a therapist.
Yeah, so we called Catherine from Expansive Connection because we know her and we know that she is familiar with us and the lifestyle and would be uniquely qualified to address this particular situation.
And we respect her so much.
Mm-hmm. And we also went back and listened to her on the We Got a Thing podcast, her episode about jealousy, that I have listened to two or three times in the past. It's so valuable. And I think that's from October of 2017, if you guys want to check it out. And I realized in listening to that again that my lid had been flipped for 5 days straight, that I was just in a fight, flight, or freeze mode. I was responding from my lizard brain, not my logical brain, even though that was there kind of on the periphery. The strongest reaction was from my gut, which was telling me your security, the thing that you value most in the world, is threatened right now. And you've got to do whatever it takes to protect it. So I had been existing in that space for 5 days. And there was just this frightened child that was crying and wanted comfort and, you know, wanted their attachment figure, which in this case is you, to just come alongside and say, it's okay. It's going to be okay. I love you. Right. And I had been needing that desperately. And it became super clear to me as I listened to that podcast that this is the state we had been existing in for the past 5 days.
Right. So the nice thing is, by the time we had the call with Catherine, we were in a better spot. That sharp divide had been crossed and we were together. But we were both realizing that, hey, crisis averted, let's have a party, was not an option. That we had work to do because we had put off dealing with this fissure in our relationship for the whole time. So we were able to talk about it more dispassionately. And she just saw some amazing things. Like, you know, that when you have that moment where you feel someone's holding up a mirror to you, and it's so powerful because you think, well, the mirror should be no surprise because you live with yourself, but you obviously see yourself differently when it's through the words of another individual. And I found it very powerful. I think you did too.
What specifically did you find powerful?
One of the things she said was that when you, Liam, feel that your moral reasoning is being impeached, you will fight to the death to defend your good name. And those words rang so true for me. I could see that throughout my entire life as being something that, yes, I'm always that guy who feels like even if I did something that other people would judge as negative, I have very good reasoning for it. And if you allow me, if you'll give me an hour of your time, I'll tell you why what I did was actually what any person of good faith would do in those same circumstances. And it's a real shutdown in terms of me being able to appreciate the position of another, especially you, because I'm in defense mode and nothing can knock me off that game.
The thing that I took away from that first session with her that I found very valuable was a book recommendation. So she recommended the book Polysecure by, I think it's Jessica Fern, I want to say.
Yeah, there is some kind of plant life in her name.
So I immediately downloaded that audiobook and listened to the first few chapters of it. And she talks about attachment styles. And I realized as she described the anxious attachment style, which is someone who grew up in a home where one or more of the parents were a little unstable and you felt as a child like your job was to try and stabilize your parent or parent your parent. And you never felt like there was someone that you could turn to, which was my upbringing for sure. That person grows into someone who has this anxious attachment. And it's characterized by working really hard to keep your partner close, to feel secure in your relationship, sometimes even subsuming your own identity in your partners in order to make them feel valued, to keep them close. So I seem to be a textbook case of this anxious attachment style. And I've definitely seen it in all my relationships. I've always felt like it is my number one job to make my partner happy and to make them love me and to do all the things I can do to show them that I am their best option so that they never leave me. So there you have it. Pretty intense, huh? I just want to let you know that this was recorded a couple days before the date, where feelings were at an all-time high. We were feeling really raw, and it was kind of hard to listen back to this. But the date has now happened, and we have survived. So stay tuned for our part two follow-up episode, where we unpack what happened on the date, how we felt about it, and whether or not we're going to continue on this journey. As always, we would love to hear from you. The best way to get in touch with us is to email us at themonogamishmarriage@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, themonogamishmarriage.com, or our Twitter account, @monogamish1, where we're active daily. We've also got Instagram accounts if you'd like to see some more pictures. So I operate under The Monogamish Marriage.
And I can be found as Liam_VS_time, Liam versus Time on Instagram.
Thanks for being with us. See you next time.